That's really what Curator was meant to be, a public collection that any independent boutique hotel can be a part of to harness the power of scale that they can't do on their own. So the idea was a safe place for independent boutiques to come in to get some cost savings, be more profitable, perhaps then stay independent.
Welcome to The Turndown. This week, I have the pleasure of sitting down with Jennifer Barnwell. She's the president at Curator Hotels and Resort Collection. Jen discusses with me her concerns about the consolidation of hotel brands in the hospitality industry, where big brands are buying independent boutique hotels. She believes that these independent hotels lose their shine and uniqueness when they become part of a big brand. So let's dive into that. I can't wait for you to discover Jen, her expertise, her experience, and her insights around this topic. Jen, welcome to the program. Welcome to The Turndown. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you, Sebastian. It is my pleasure. I had so much fun with you in New Orleans, so I was happy to talk even longer with you this time around.
You remember that. We were sitting on a stage. I think we were the closing sessions. What did we talk about? Do you remember that?
Well, we were a little bit of the wrap-up. You had a really fun kind of set of three segments right ahead of me. And it was a little bit of, you know, different parts of the tech stack, kind of like duking it out against each other on stage in a very playful, fun and respectable way, which was very enjoyable. And then I got to do a little wrap up with you from the independent hotelier standpoint. And then on the other side was someone from Wyndham who got, you know, a little bit into the more bigger brand perspective. So I think it made for a really good, you know, quick conversation wrap up about, you know, I guess the two different sides of our industry.
Yeah, I remember now we were, the session was called The Reality Check, and you were there to basically demystify a lot of statements by technology providers and potentially argue that in reality, maybe things look a little bit different. Let's get to that. I want to talk about technology. I want to talk about hospitality. But before we get started, true to, I guess, the definition of this podcast and this program, I'm very curious, what is keeping you up at night these days?
Well, I will say something that's work-related and kind of absolutely true that, you know, a pretty big concern of mine and kind of in my wheelhouse, and it does keep me up at night. You know, I'm one of those people that it's at night, like, you know, a million things running through my head at night every night, but it's really all this consolidation of brands in the market. You know, it seems like we've been hit with a lot of headlines very, very recently. It's just the big brands buying independents. And they could be as small as, you know, Nomad has one hotel, I think, right? Okay, so, all right, that's interesting. You're going to buy a brand of one and then, of course, develop and distribute it more. But everything, you know, from Graduate, you know, a big brand's doing deals with small luxury hotels, Graduate, Dream. You know, I know there's perhaps many sides to it. It feels disappointing to me because I just, you know, for many years I lived in the independent boutique space and just love it so much and think it's so special. And I can understand the financial considerations, you know, of taking a buyout, sure. But on the other side of it, it's just like, how big do the brands need to be continuing to scoop up, you know, these independent brands and concepts? I understand why, because so many travelers are into that now, something unique and interesting, boutique lifestyle, independent, you know, whatever you want to call it. But to the layperson, it's like, you know, I ask my husband, you know, I'll throw some brands up. I can't even keep track anymore. How many brands does Marriott have and Hilton have? He has no idea what all these brands are, who they're a part of. And it just kind of feels like, and then this is just one person's perspective that, you know, they lose, for me, they lose their shine, they lose interest. I think they end up being kind of a shell, perhaps, of what they used to be before they were part of the big brand. So that's always kind of front and center and top of mind for me, especially with, you know, the whole flurry of announcements we've seen in the press the last couple of weeks.
And it would like to continue, is, I guess, your expectation, right?
I mean, are there any last? Yeah, I mean, I think something like Graduate was kind of not a big surprise. I think I've been following them for a while. It's been so interesting and so cool and unique, you know, these secondary markets and how high design they are. And I know that some of the designers and artists they use, I mean, that's been so interesting, but maybe that was their plan from the very beginning to have an exit. But some of the other brands, it just kind of seems unfortunate to just now be part of this big machine. And, you know, we saw it with many years ago when she bought Kimpton. I mean, when I started my career with a publicly traded hotel REIT and was an asset manager, it was my first introduction to Kimpton. And man, they were just so fun and so special. And no one really liked them, especially all the team members they had. And then we went through the whole, because we owned a bunch of Kimptons when she bought them. And we went through that whole process of both on the Kimpton side and the IHG side, trying to convince us that don't worry, you know, they'll kind of operate separately and they'll remain, you know, how special they are. But then also trying to, you know, convince us to be in the IHG loyalty program and, like, you know, somehow accept all these, you know, different increases in fees and expenses and all these things. And there's going to be, oh, this big proliferation at the top line, you know, which frankly, we didn't really see. And so many of the great Kimpton people left. I mean, they're just not there anymore. So I'm a little bit scarred by that experience for sure, which informs how I feel today every time I see a headline about a small, you know, historically independent boutique brand getting bought by the big guys. You're going to understand why they do it. You know, it is what it is. It's, you know, you listen to these quarter end calls, everything turns on their growth statistics, and doesn't matter how you get there, if you're building or if you're buying. But I live and breathe the independent boutique space now. So I want everyone to stay independent that wants to stay independent, I guess I would say. And, you know, maybe it opens up an opportunity, but the real estate doesn't go away. So if, you know, yesterday down the street, it was a Dream Hotel, well, now that's owned by Hyatt. It didn't go away. It's just like, okay, well, then how are these maybe new? Maybe it's an opportunity for innovation and creation for new independent offerings and brands. But you got to find the spot to put them, right?
Yeah.
So the real estate didn't disappear. Just somebody else owns it now. It's still there in the supply chain. So
you have so many interesting comments. And as you were talking, I was thinking about my own trips that I take. And I travel, unfortunately, too much. I think I have like two to three trips a month, if you will. And much too often, I wouldn't say disappointed, but I'm in a hotel room that reminds me of the previous hotel room, and it doesn't excite me anymore. Or I'm staying in a hotel that is comfort zone, but there's no excitement. There's no surprise. There is, you know, and, you know, often enough, this hotel is close to a conference center or a convention or an airport, if you will. So I'm not saying that it's always the ideal destination for a independent hotel, but, you know, hotels, at least in my youth, were something that were exciting, were different, were places that we sought out. A lot of that has changed a little bit, at least in my opinion, right? That's my personal opinion as two people talk. I want to understand, Jen, how you got started in the industry. How did Jen become Jen?
Oh, good question. So, I mean, it really goes back. It goes back to college, actually. So, I feel like even today, I mean, I don't know how anybody knows what they want to do when they're a teenager. I really don't. And if you do, it's just like, that is amazing. I'm pretty impressed by that. But I had two older siblings, believe it or not, they both went to Cornell. And when it was time for me to go, you know, I was pretty decent volleyball player at the time and had that experience of knowing where my siblings were. So by very good fortune, I ended up at Cornell too. And my sister was in the hotel school. She's like, oh, this is amazing. You should do this. So it all kind of came together. I ended up in the hotel school at Cornell and loved it. Because it was, you know, I came from a small town in upstate New York, and the joke was it was like Statler High School, like that was the name of the building where all the hotel school classes were. And it was kind of like a little school within a school. Lots of camaraderie, lots of fun. I definitely gravitated to more of the kind of accounting finance aspects of it, but I got such great exposure to everything within the industry. You know, we had to run a restaurant, we had a food lab, we had marketing, you know, even public speaking, you know, all the stuff. So out of Cornell, I mean, the recruiting out of Cornell is just fantastic. Again, it's such, you know, good fortune that I had. I had done some summer internships, so I'd worked in hotels and kind of knew that wasn't really where I wanted to be. It was really more analytical focused, and just kind of wanted to be in an office, I guess. So the recruiting was fantastic for me. I went to an ownership group in New York City, did a lot. They were very vertically integrated. So I worked on, they were an owner and developer of big convention center hotels. So I got to do some asset management. They managed some assets too. They were building a hotel in Puerto Rico at that point that I got to go participate on. And I worked in, we kind of called it our investment banking group, but it was really just brokerage. So I got to work on helping owners buy and sell their hotels, helping them place debt on their hotels as an advisor. So I got to see a lot of things. And also, honestly, just work incredibly hard. It wasn't as hard as what I understood it was in the investment banks, but it was pretty grueling. I mean, it was like 12-hour days every day working, not every weekend, but every other weekend, and making almost barely enough to survive in New York City, like sleeping in the living room of my sister's apartment. So I would say I worked really hard in school. I was lucky enough to have a position right out of school and, you know, just really kind of grind it out. And landing in an ownership company was really great for me. That's kind of what has shaped who I am today, because I really liked being in the space where you're actually making the decisions, right? So you hire all the, you know, interior designers and project managers and, you know, general contractors, and you hire, you know, you find banks to give you loans, and but you're the owner, like you're in the position of the owner, and you ultimately get to make all the decisions. All the stress and everything falls on your shoulders, but you're in the driver's seat. So I had that experience, which was absolutely phenomenal. And then just by way of that experience and, you know, people that I'd worked at that firm with, I got a call to come down to DC and join Pebblebrook Hotel Trust, which was just being formed and launched, a brand new hotel REIT, basically a startup. Everyone was kind of getting handpicked to come in. And, you know, I was still fairly young and I was single, and I was like, well, I can always go back to New York. Let me go down and see what DC is all about. And I had never worked at a public company before. So it was extremely exciting to come down. There was probably only like 15 employees at the time, get asset management set up and go through the paces of what's involved in being part of a public company, which I'd always worked for private companies. I mean, it is intense. I mean, public companies run on a whole other very regimented schedule. And it was like, I felt like I was like coming alive again and learning so much more you know, in my mid to late 30s than I had ever learned up to that point, just so much more discipline and focus and prioritization. And just like, it was one after another. I mean, we had gone public and had all this money, and we were just, you know, vying for properties one after another. Seemed like we were buying a new property kind of every other week, and then also building out the whole company. So that was kind of, I mean, I haven't jumped around very much. I worked for, I mean, if you count Curator, where I am today, which is like an offshoot of Pebblebrook, it's just really, it's just four companies in my whole career for a good amount of times at each. And kind of the tying factor was all, you know, being involved in ownership organizations.
Wow. One must lead to the next, by the sounds of it, right? Like,
yeah,
your experiences with franchisees, with owners, with operators, with brand led you to where you are now, by the sounds. So I want to hear how that happened, because you started the conversation with I'm staying up at night because independent hotels are disappearing. Now your company, Curator, if I understand correctly, is servicing independent hotels, is embracing independent hotels, is enabling. Seems like there is a story here that is almost linear. Help me understand how you ended up with Curator.
Yeah, so it was born out of what we were doing for ourselves at Pebblebrook when I was part of the asset management group. So really from the beginning of Pebblebrook, there was always interest, and you saw it in the portfolio and the purchases and acquisitions over time in independent hotels. I mean, the CEO had come from LaSalle that had, you know, plenty of independent boutique lifestyle hotels as well. So Pebblebrook has always been very well diversified in terms of kind of geography, but also independence and brand franchise and, you know, a few brand managed as well. So I ended up as an asset manager at Pebblebrook, having, again, the true good fortune of working on a lot of the independent hotels in the portfolio, because I was overseeing hotels in LA and San Francisco, where we had a lot of independents. And just working with those teams and going through most of them, we were renovating and repositioning and sometimes renaming. Just going through that process was so inspiring, because I'm pretty self-aware in terms of being pretty analytical person, and then just like contractual, like agreements and those kind of things are kind of my wheelhouse. But sitting in a design meeting with an interior designer and seeing, like, hearing the vision, you know, the words, the storytelling, and then seeing the renderings and the images, I mean, that's something I definitely cannot do. Mm-hmm. I love to be part of it, but I find it so inspiring and interesting, and, you know, makes my job at that point, like, even more interesting to me. So while an asset manager at Pebblebrook, I was gaining whole lot of experience. Like I said earlier, you know, my first interaction with Kim, also my first interaction with Viceroy and other independent managers that Pebblebrook worked with over the years. And it was like, wow, really opened my eyes, because I had come from mostly brand managed or brand franchised history or experience. So I just absolutely fell in love with it and was really drawn to working on the independents more so. And I did work at both on Pebblebrook. I mean, some brand managed, yeah, is a whole different beast. And you kind of, you know, you get a few wins here and there, but there's a lot that, you know, is inflexible, I will say, and, mm-hmm, you know, untouchable. And you just have to kind of swallow that. So it really kind of the germination of Curator, I would say, happened when Pebblebrook actually ended up buying another publicly traded REIT, LaSalle, uh-huh, and combining the two companies together. And then the portfolio doubled in size overnight to 64 properties. So we combined the two companies, created a little subset team with an asset management that was completely focused on finding value, cost savings opportunities, new technologies and systems and products to, you know, beta tests and pilot tests, because we had doubled in size. We're pretty sizable at that point. So let's figure out the things, what can we harness through our new scale, right? So Curator was an outgrowth of what Pebblebrook had done for itself. Like, we got so much bigger. Which vendors should we be working with in certain spaces? Can we get some cost efficiencies out of them? Mm-hmm. And can we keep our finger on the pulse of what's happening out there and test these new, maybe different aspects of the tech stack or different products, like I said, and services, to see if we then want to, you know, roll them out and put them in more of our hotels. So all that told, I wasn't in that little group at the time. It did internally save Pebblebrook on a P&L basis, kind of multiple millions of dollars.
Uh-huh.
And so lots of conversations with vendors, lots of conversations with the operators that Pebblebrook was using at that time, ended up in the idea, like, why don't we roll this whole kind of work plan out publicly as a separate company? And that's really what Curator was meant to be and was at launch. It was a collection, a public collection that any independent boutique hotel can be a part of to harness the power of scale that they can't do on their own. Because you might be a single owner operated independent hotel, you might be a group of only maybe four or five independents, or even if you're a group of 15 or 20, you know, Curator had the promise of being 100, 200, maybe we'll be 300 hotels someday. So that was our mentality going into every negotiation and picking the best vendor in every space first and foremost, but then negotiating the best terms we had ever seen, you know, in all of our past experience. So the idea was, offer this up. It's a safe place for independents and boutiques to come into to get some cost savings, be more profitable, perhaps then stay independent,
mm-hmm.
or make staying independent maybe a little bit easier than it otherwise would be. So we started as a B2B business back in the end of 2020. And now since kind of the end of 2023, we've been kind of tiptoeing into the BNC, the B2C space, to see if we can raise awareness for our hotels, amplify them, and send them referrals that end up in incremental direct bookings. So we've been working on that recently too.
Wow, that's exciting. So I guess to a hotel developer, right? What would you recommend? You know, you've been in the shoes, right? You've been, should I brand a property? Should I stay independent? Is this always a financial discussion? What are some of the variables that you look at when deciding independent versus brand?
You know, there's definitely a ton of variables. Some of the things I would mention would be certainly your capital stack kind of matters. So it depends kind of who you are, what your history is, what your lending relationships are, if you need lending, because there is kind of this idea with some lenders that, you know, there's a whole group in the, you know, in the lending environment that really only want to lend, like they feel safer, right, if it's branded. So it depends on what you need in your capital stack. It will potentially be, depending on the location, a harder project to fund if you go down the independent path. That being said, I mean, there's plenty of markets where it's not overrun, but there's plenty of independents and they do well, like, you know, San Francisco, LA, tons of resorts are independent and do, you know, fantastic. So part of it is how you're going to get your funding and maybe the easiest way to get that. Part of it is definitely location, where you can kind of be the most successful. I mean, if you're surrounded by brands and you're the only independent, that's going to be, you know, challenging and tough depending on what you have to offer and who is operating your building, because there's so many, you know, fantastic operators of independents that are successful. Profitability is obviously a big consideration. There are a ton, and some you can't even find them in the P&L. There's just so many fees and costs associated with being part of a brand that can lead to profitability certainly suffering. on the independent side, things are much more transparent. Like, you know exactly the fees you're paying your operator, where they're going. And you just have to understand their capabilities in the independent space. Like, can they really drive the revenue and drive guest experience, you know, and drive performance on the bottom line? There's a lot of considerations in it, I think, but it does mainly come back to, you know, how are you going to fund it and what do your investors want?
Mm-hmm.
But it's going down the independent boutique route is definitely more challenging. You don't have a big brand, you know, and all their brand awareness and all, you know, their loyalty channel to plug into. But gosh, it's so much more fun and rewarding and interesting every day.
It is so much more fun and interesting. I mean, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, we see this all the time, right? We have owners approach us and say, hey, we're currently flagged. We're thinking of deflagging. We're thinking of, you know, what support can you provide? And I used to work myself for Expedia, which, you know, as an OTA, you tend to embrace independent hotels much more because they need you more, right? They don't have the power of necessarily of the big brands. And it's interesting that you are shifting to demand generation with Curator as well. You're trying to create a brand amongst your independent hotels to potentially share business. And are you thinking loyalty program as well, distribution as well? What's your end goal there?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely not there yet. I think we, just as a company, it's incumbent upon us to make sure we're continually creating value for our members. Mm-hmm. So it started with the B2C in terms of all the contracts we put together from a cost savings perspective. But in all that work, finding vendors in certain spaces and recommended partnerships, we also do have partnerships with some revenue producing groups. So we were very early on partnered with Capital One, their credit card program. It has been phenomenal for our members to be part of that. And that we like it because it was new and upcoming over a year ago, and it's direct. Mm-hmm. The hotels work directly with them to give them inventory. They're not going through an OTA to pull it. So the cost structure works, and it's a closed member group, and it's really producing well. We have a few other things. We're partnered with Mr. and Mrs. Smith. We're partnered with things like Travel Zoo and other options. But for the independent space, certainly driving top line is paramount, of course, and it's challenging. And if there is any way whatsoever to displace, even if it's a little bit of OTA business, it's so attractive to independent hotels, right? Because they definitely rely on the OTAs, and there's no judgment there. It just is what it is. A very high percentage of independent boutique hotel segmentation comes from OTA. It's kind of necessary. But it's so expensive. If you look at the commissions they charge the independents, and they will not negotiate at all, plus all the ancillary dollars, whether it's travel ads or accelerator or whatever it is, co-op marketing, for some of these independent boutiques, it can get close to 30% that it costs you for your OTA bookings. So if there's any way that we can drive them some more awareness and incremental bookings on a direct basis, it's, I mean, of course, everything we do at Curator, it's meant to be additive. We're not competing with what the hotel is already doing for themselves. Or very top of funnel awareness campaigns. We're a referral site. We're driving a ton of traffic to our site to see our hotels and then ultimately go book on the hotel sites themselves. And we have all the statistics and the tracking to show that it's working. But that's where we are today. I wouldn't call us a brand today. We're not a brand. It's kind of a loose affiliation and collective and, you know, cross-pollinating each other, because why not, right? With some email campaigns. And it's working. At some point soon, you know, we're going to keep aggregating the data, looking back and saying, okay, well, how can we push this even farther to help hotels on the top line, you know, specifically rooms revenue, but also booking all the amazing experiences that they have created for themselves that's unique to them. It's not, we'll go take a boat ride and go deep sea fishing. It's specifically tied to our hotels, and we feature them all on our website too.
Yeah, they're so amazing. And I'm sure they would want you to be successful and bring your incrementality, especially if, you know, they are paying 30% or upwards, up to 30% in commissions.
Right? It's painful. I mean, to your point earlier, it's just the independent hotels are the OTA's absolute best supplier on a, you know, per room commission basis. What these independent hotels pay is outrageous, but we don't have the leverage that the big brands have. So the big brands keep getting their commissions cut every year, every couple of years. Meanwhile, they shouldn't even need the OTAs, in my opinion, although they're on them all the time. But it's such a, it's a fraction of the segmentation in a branded hotel that it isn't an independent. But the OTAs, you know, I don't want to go on a complete tangent, but they don't treat their best clients or their best suppliers very well. That's my opinion.
Okay. We can't talk about distribution without talking about Google and without talking about social, right? Like I'm watching my kids interact with platforms that I don't even understand yet at this point in time. I'm wondering if that is where they will find inspiration when they decide to travel. At times, maybe not. Maybe they'll ask me. Who knows? But I'm curious how you're thinking about, let's start with the big G, with the Google and the world. How are you thinking about the TikTok generation, the sort of social aspect of travel? Is this something you're watching? Is this something you're investing in? Is this something that you think hotels should do more of?
Yeah, we are specifically investing in that space because our positioning is we want to capture the people, meaning drive them to our website when they are dreaming about their next trip, when they're, you know, just trying to gather ideas of what they want to do. So we are focusing our digital marketing efforts through a couple areas. We're doing, you know, the typical kind of PPC keywords, you know, through Google, word buys, but we're focused on, you know, what they call top of funnel, right? So we're focused on the high generic terms. We're, you know, competing with the OTAs on that, but we think that's where we should be because we're trying to not compete with at the hotel level and they're, you know, much more down funnel. But so we are investing, you know, pretty substantially in the digital marketing space through Google. We're doing display ads and retargeting. Again, it's specific to what we have to offer with our collection and our experiences, trying to capture the dreamers to come to our site and then ever evolving our site with content so that they will actually come back. So it's kind of like this idea of people probably go to Expedia and Booking a lot to shop because it's all right there. A little smaller scale. But we want that to be the thought about curator. If you want something unique and interesting and memorable in the hotel travel space, come to curator website because we have over 100 experiences, you know, and we have almost 100, I'm sorry, we have 100 hotels, over 100 hotels to check out, but also almost 100 experiences that you can have at these various hotels, like all in one spot. And then social, we revamped our social channels near the end of last year. And my gosh, Instagram is just a wonder. Like it is so successful for us to post. I don't want to use the overused word authentic, but I will say, you know, not too slick or overbranded, but posts and videos and reels and, you know, carousels that are true to our branding and what we have to offer and look interesting. And we also do the ads and promoted posts, and it drives a ton of traffic to our site. So there's no doubt people are looking on social for inspiration, especially Instagram. I would tell you on TikTok, I mean, there's so much talk about it. We've been going kind of round and round with our agency about it, and they, you know, done some due diligence on our member hotels that are on it and kind of what happens. And the jury's still out for us on TikTok on whether or not it's truly effective yet for driving traffic to a website and ultimately purchases. So we haven't done TikTok yet, but I'm reserving it, you know, for the near future. It's always under consideration.
Excellent. Excellent. Very cool. I'm curious, you know, going back a little bit to what you do, a lot of independent hotels reach out to you for guidance on what technology they should invest in. You're helping them source better terms and conditions. What are some of the areas that hotels are investing in today? And maybe adding to that, what should they invest more in from your perspective that they're maybe not doing enough?
Yeah, the biggest thing that we're seeing is in the independent space, in the hotels we work with, is there has, and no one has said the hotel industry is like super quick to change, right? So, I mean, this may sound like a dated comment, although it's not, because it's still happening today. We've got hotels that are finally embracing cloud-based platforms. So we've had a lot of movement in our hotels on the PMS side, you know, going from not only on-prem, but someone who may have been kind of the old school incumbent with a lot of these, but moving to someone that's more cloud-based and nimble and kind of more straightforward and easy. We've seen a lot of movement to more both client and consumer friendly PMS systems. Also on the POS side too, we've seen a lot of movement. A lot of our hotels have changed out old historic POS systems to something much more user-friendly, cloud-based. Finally, I mean, you know, I was an asset manager starting like 14 years ago. And it was like, back then it was like, how do we get the remote tablet so you can do everything at the table? Like, finally, it's 2024. So we finally have reliable partners in the POS space. So a lot of hotels are investing in that to be more efficient. It's definitely going to help revenue. If you can get to your tables and key in revenue quicker, and sometimes, you know, with the QR codes and everything, the guests can order it themselves, and just it makes your revenue potential that much greater. Those are kind of the biggest things we've seen kind of from the tech platform. Other than there's also been a pretty big change from, again, an old kind of, not historic, but RMS system that a lot of hotels just use for years and years. Everyone was comfortable with moving to something that's, you know, cloud-based, more dynamic, and has helped, you know, the revenue pricing and helped everyone kind of get incrementally to a better place than they were before. So what we've seen over the last kind of 3 years of our existence is people really, once you got out of COVID, taking a really hard look at how did our old vendors service us during COVID? Were they nice? Were they not nice? You know, history doesn't matter anymore.
Okay.
Because it's irrelevant. Nobody's comparing to 2020 or will ever in history anymore. So can we start fresh with something that's much more user-friendly and efficient for us? So we've seen that really throughout the tech stack. CRS has been pretty consistent. We don't see, people are pretty happy with whoever they're using at the point, even though I know there's new players in that space that are pretty exciting that we're researching, but PMS, POS, and RMS we've seen a lot of changes in that in the last few years.
Is there any area that hotels should invest in that they're not investing enough?
You know, I think it's a little bit of a quandary, because I would say offering choice is always a good idea, I think. Well, so offering certain services and like leave it to the guest to use it or not. So I personally have someone who likes text messaging, right? So I like text messaging. I like the idea of online check-in and mobile key. It pretty much continues to be a little bit murky, though, in terms of there's so many players that do it or say they can do it. Some of them are all separate companies. You have to make sure they all integrate together. Some companies are trying to bring it all together under one umbrella. We've been doing pilot testing on this stuff, you know, kind of onesies and twosies for years now. And it's frustrating because it's got to work, right? And then in some cases where we have it in place, people aren't using it. So then you're like, okay, why did I bother? So I think customer engagement tools are always a good idea to invest in. But it, and this is kind of where Curator comes in, but you really gotta make sure you understand everyone that's in that space, what they can do and can't do, and pick the right one to go with and make sure, you know, the onboarding's great and they're effective and it works. And then even after you do that, someone may buy them. You end up, they're part of some other company and they completely change from what they were a year ago. So
guilty. We bought
something.
I'm
not negative
too.
On technology at all, but it's complicated.
No, I get it. We bought a company as well. We bought Whistle a few years back because we wanted to integrate the check-in experience, the contactless experience into our PMS because we think it should be part of it.
For
sure. Can't wait to demo that to you. Anyway, but I hear
I would
you,
love
right?
That.
text messages, I'm a big fan. Funnily enough, I still prefer an actual physical key. I don't like my phone as a key because it's never fully loaded.
Yeah.
I'm afraid that the door won't open. I'm a big fan of the physical key, so I'm old school.
I will tell you, I agree with you. My very favorite thing are the wristband keys.
Oh,
and
that's
generally
not bad. Yes.
Generally, they're only at resorts. But man, when I get a wristband key, it actually makes me very happy.
Because it's fail-proof. It works. There's never an issue somehow.
You don't have to like put it in a pocket. Like it's always on you. It's so easy and convenient.
It also doesn't demagnetize or whatever. Now
here
we're talking about things. One piece of technology that you think is disappearing from the hotel room.
Oh, the phone. Is it already gone?
Could be gone already.
Well, okay. I guess legally you probably still need a way to call 911, so that's not going to happen. But I mean, I'm old enough that it was the days where, you know, you had three phones in the room. And then all of a sudden, it's just like one
including
little...
the bathroom, which never understood why, but okay.
It's like there's one in the bathroom and then it's a standard room, but you got to have one over here. You got to have one by the bed and then also one by the desk. So I guess I'm at least seeing the evolution where there's just one little skinny handheld phone, like maybe by the bed, and that's all. That's it anymore. Gosh, that's a good question. I don't think I have another answer for that because I'm thinking of our rooms. It's like, I don't think the TV's going anywhere. I just think everyone's going to cast their content onto it.
So everyone's going to bring their own account. The phone, the TV is there, but pay TV is gone.
I'm just like really simple too when I travel maybe, but it's like the TV can be there. You can have a bunch of local channels, but all you should worry about is people casting their content on the TV. Because when I see the stats from these TV providers, it's like there's a huge percentage of people that don't even turn on the TV at all, which I guess is the argument for not having one, but I still think you do because people now, you can watch what you want to watch when you want to watch it. So if there's no casting, I just watch my phone, which kind of sucks, but I do it on the plane anyway in my little screen. So I think everyone is just conditioned to watch their own content. And if it doesn't work on the big TV, they just won't turn it on. So you should make sure it works. I love the speakers in the rooms. I use them. I mean, do you need the clock part of it? No, I think every room still needs a Bluetooth speaker at some point because it's kind of fun and usable. I mean, what other electronics are there in the room?
I think we found a few.
The thermostat.
The thermostat should be on your phone.
You need that.
You need that, yeah.
I don't want too much stuff on my phone.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, I mean, this is going to be a difficult question for you. I'm sure it is. Your favorite independent hotel worldwide?
Oh, my God. Oh, it's not hard.
Okay. Now, there you go. There you go.
It's called...
Is it part of your collection?
No, I wish it was. It's called Casa Angelina. It's in Italy. Why can't I think of the area? Where are the cliffs? And oh my gosh.
Amalfi?
Amalfi Coast. Yes. It's Amalfi Coast. Years ago, my husband and I were trying to find somewhere to go. We thought we wanted to go to Amalfi, you know, doing all this research. And this is actually years ago. We ended up picking through TripAdvisor. And it was just one of those magical trips where it was all those pictures of Amalfi Coast are beautiful to begin with, but in person, it was absolutely spectacular. We've been lucky enough to go twice in the last, how old is my daughter now? In the last like 5 years. So hopefully we'll make it back there again. And I'm not big on necessarily going back to the same place internationally over and over because I like to have new experiences, but I follow them on Instagram. I'm sometimes happy to see the pictures, but it also makes me sad that we're not there. So Casa Angelina, look it up. It's absolutely spectacular. The best service, beautiful, super relaxing.
My follow-up question was going to where you travel to next, but it could be Casa Angelina. Where are you going next?
Well, it is exciting though, because I used to live there. I'm going to New York next month for work.
Nice.
But after that, we just, personal family thing. We're in the DC area. And so if you're here, people go to the beaches in Delaware. So we have a little family tradition now that we go down to this little town called Lewis in Delaware. We rent a beach house every year. So that's what we do in June every year. So that's my next little personal jaunt with the kids.
Sounds fantastic. Sounds fantastic.
It's just going to be great.
Jen, thank you so much for being on the program. Really enjoyed our conversation. And I
Me
can't
too.
Wait to catch up with you in person, maybe in New York.
I know.
Maybe, you know, early June I'll be in New York. But anyway, thank you for being on the program.
I will too.
Thank you for listening to The Turndown. Don't forget to subscribe and tune in next week as we discover new exciting guests.